last week we started on the opening Mishnah in the second parak, and we dealt with the two separate issues. Issue number one that we dealt with was the issue of a woman who gets divorced or her husband passes away. It's time to pay the ksuba, and whoever's paying the ksuba says she was not a basula at the time of the wedding. There is no document. We don't have a ksuba document. It was a place where they don't write it, or it was lost, or whatever it was. And the question is, how can you determine that she in fact was a basula at the time of the wedding, as she claims? And so we said there's this piece of evidence, there's that piece of evidence. That was the first part of the Mishnah. And then the second half of the Mishnah dealt with a Pesha Asar Hua Pesha Hitir case, a case in which somebody's words get him into legal trouble. And the question now is he credible to undo the legal trouble, since he was the one who created the problem in the first place? So he is an owner of a field. And as far as we know right now, nobody has ever questioned his ownership of that field. And he goes over to somebody and he says, you know, this field of mine actually used to belong to your family, but I bought it off of them. I bought it off of your father. And he has no evidence to support the fact that the statement that he bought it off of the guy's father. And so the question is, maybe he should in fact have to return the field, because he says it belonged to them. On the other hand, he's the one who created the problem for himself. There was no evidence anywhere that the field belonged to this guy's father beforehand. And therefore, Rabbi Yeshua said, you know, here, I'm going to actually agree he gets to keep the field. Even though I apparently didn't like such things before, these were migos, as we said in the Gemara. Because he could have just kept his mouth closed, he didn't have to say anything at all. Therefore, we'll believe him when he says that he bought it. Rabbi Yeshua says, I'm good with that. That migo is fine with me. Does this ring a bell? Right? Okay. So, the last part of Shir last week, we dealt with the Gemara's question of why Rabbi Yeshua is okay with this migo regarding the field, where he rejected migos in the first parak. That was what we wanted to know. And the most interesting part of the discussion is not what we had last week, but where we're going with it this week, at least to me, at any rate. But I brought you in Source Aleph the Gemara's attempt, first of all, to figure out which migo was it that Rabbi Yeshua rejected in the first parak. We're not going through the entire Gemara now, but the last case, the last bullet point in Aleph said the following was the story where Rabbi Yeshua rejected the migo. A man married a woman. They have a wedding. It's a very nice wedding. Everybody's having a great time. And after the wedding, lo and behold, lo matzah la besulim. He doesn't find besulim. So he shows up to Beis Din. She says it's true. It was a terrible story. She was raped after the wedding. Not after the wedding, after the kiddushin, not after the wedding. She was raped after the kiddushin. She was a besula at the time of the kiddushin, and then this horrific thing happened. And he, being the unsympathetic legalist husband that we've seen in Maseches Ksuvos all year long, instead of being sympathetic and, you know, dealing, you know, in a rational way with this situation, he says, no, I think you were raped before the kiddushin. And you covered it up in order to pose as a basula so that you could get a larger ksuba payment in the event of death or divorce. That's his response to it. So her legal team gets together and says, well, there's nothing we can do for this marriage anyway, because at this point we're at the end of the relationship. Now, not in the first paragraph, but anyway. Her legal team says, well, you know, she had the option of saying that I was a mukas eitz. There was no rape ever. I was a mukas eitz. There was some kind of a physical trauma that caused the loss of the besulim. That would actually be better for her because then she could marry a kohen afterwards. So the fact that she said she made a claim that was not as good for her should be credible. That was the migo. And there, Rabbi Yeshua didn't accept the migo. However, in the field case, he accepted the migo. So the Gemara said, why? The last line in Source Aleph, Michti hai migo v'hai migo, this is a migo and this is a migo. They're both, you could have claimed X, and instead you claimed something that was worse than X, therefore we should believe you when you make your claim that's worse than X. So, maishna hai migo mehai migo, why are they different? Why is Rabbi Yeshua accepting one and rejecting the other? Hacha ein shor shachut lefanecha, Hasam Hare Shor Shachut Lefanecha. So the answer is, very clear answer, here there's no slaughtered ox. There is a slaughtered ox. We had no idea what you were talking about, what that meant. So first we brought Rashi and Tosfos, who fit our edition, and in Beis I just brought you my list of the different positions. But Rashi and the Ri took our language, which is that the Shor Shachut is in the first perek. The slaughtered ox is in the case of the woman. And either, as you see in Source Beis, Rashi says what we're saying is that there is the Shor Shachut, the slaughtered ox, means there is a claim against her. The husband is saying there are no Basulim. You were not a Basula at the time of the Kiddushin. That's the claim to which she is responding. And because there is a claim against her to which she is responding, Rabbi Yeshua says she doesn't necessarily have the same credibility. Maybe the reason why she didn't make her best possible claim was because of the pressure that comes with responding to a claim. That was why she didn't make her best possible claim. So I don't believe the Migo. It isn't that she's telling the truth. It's that she didn't think of the best possible lie. That's the way that that Rashi explains what Rabbi Yeshua is saying. The Ri, Tosfos, had a different take on it. He also said that the case with the slaughtered ox, by the way, so the parallel is like somebody whose ox is slaughtered and now he goes to make a claim and says, hey, you shechted my ox. So similarly, the husband is saying, you didn't have Besulim at the time of the wedding. The Ri says that the slaughtered ox is not about there being a claim, it's about there being evidence. In the case over there, in the case in the first perek, there is evidence against her, lack of Besulim. Similarly, it's like where the guy's ox has been slaughtered, there is evidence that a crime was committed. Somebody stole his ox. Somebody killed his ox. And because there is evidence against her, therefore Rabbi Yoshua is not willing to accept the Migo. Because it's not a plain Migo, it's a Migo versus evidence. That's the way that Rashi and Tosos explained Shor Shachut Lefanecha, right? That rings a bell? Okay. Then we showed that other Rishonim had a flipped edition. And they said the slaughtered ox was actually the second parak case. The slaughtered ox is the case of the field. And therefore it's in support of Amigo, not against the Amigo. The Ritva said, still in Source Beis where you've got my list, that the claim that the guy makes about the field, the claim that he could have made, not that he actually made. The claim he made about the field was, I bought it off of your father, right? But the claim that he could have made, which is, the field has been mine all along, is a claim that everybody would have accepted. It's just like a shor, an ox that's been shechted, is assumed to be kosher. It has a chazakah of being kosher. We assume shochtim know what they're doing. So just like an ox that's shechted, we assume is kosher until we find out otherwise. So too, not dealing with trefos issues, but just that we assume the shechita wasn't botched. We assume the shechita itself was done right. So too here, the claim that he could have made of the field has been mine all along is one that would have been accepted. Therefore, we take the Migo. As opposed to, in her case, the claim that she could have made of Mukas Eitzani would not necessarily have been an accepted claim. We talked about that within the Ritva last time. I'm not going into the full discussion. He had said that not everybody accepts the Mukas Eitz claim. The Meiri quoted the Gedolei HaMefarshim, which we said seems to be the Baal Amor, the Rashba, the Ravid, with a different explanation, but along the same lines of the Shor Shachut being assumed to be kosher. So he says, the reality is we want to keep money in the possession of the person who has it right now. We want to keep the money where it is at this moment. So therefore, the field will stay with the guy who holds it right now. It has greater credibility. Just like a slaughtered ox is kosher. Slaughtered ox is kosher, field stays where it is. As opposed to in the first parak where you're taking money away from the husband, you have a higher threshold to prove that she actually has the right to it. Finally, the last approach that we brought was the one that the Meiri really liked, which Ravram Sofer, in his footnotes to the Meiri, says it's the Ramban found in the Shita, although it's written a little bit differently there. But the idea there was that the claim that here he could have made, it's mine, was a strong claim. The claim that the claim of Shor Shachut, right? It's obvious that it was shechted. It's clear that it was shechted. Whereas the claim that she is relying on, the claim of Mukas Eitz, is not such a strong claim. It's only credible regarding Heter to Kohanim, because there she also has a chazaka of being a besula, and therefore it will work. But it's not a valid claim regarding Ksuba. That was the argument that he made there. Okay. All of this brings me to the Rambam. Okay. We spent the last 10 minutes reviewing a discussion that we had last time with all these Rishonim weighing in on the fundamental question of why does Rabbi Yeshua differentiate between the two Migos? And all of that is based on the Gemara's language. Shor Shachot Lefanecha, Ein Shor Shachot Lefanecha. Only question is whether it's which one is the Shor Shachot, first parak or second parak. Crystal clear. And now you look at the Rambam in Source Gimel and you scratch your head and say, why did he do what he did? Lo ha'emina Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua did not believe her in the first parak. Ve'ena mechayev es habala ze ksuba. He does not require the husband to pay the ksuba, meaning the 200 zuz. Mipnei hamigo. Shiachol alomar b'mesha hayachu talui b'inyane iser v'heter. We don't say that he is going to do this because of the migo that she could have said when you're dealing with matters of iser v'heter. In other words, the first perek is not only a matter of money, it's a matter of is she mutter to a kohen. So it's an iser v'heter issue. It's a Yeridaya question, or Evan Ezer question. Lefisha psula lekahuna or ksher lekahuna who iser v'heter. The question of psula lekahuna, whether she is in fact possible or not, that's iser v'heter. Aval kan moder Rabbi Yeshua lefisha migo taloi b'chi of mamon. Whereas in our case, it's a financial discussion. It's just a question of how much money do you owe. Kimigo diyach lememer shalihi ukamer shalavich lekachdiyam imenu naman. We're willing to believe amigo when the issues are financial. We're not willing to believe amigo when the issues are iser v'heter. The Rambam just threw out our Gemara. All these Rishonim worked so hard to explain this Gemara. And the Rambam just gave you what, on the one hand, is a beautiful answer. Right? It's a great answer. It's such a great answer that I'm like, why didn't the Gemara say that? Why didn't you just say? Why does Rishonim distinguish? Because this is iser v'heter and this is dine mamonos. Clear, simple, straightforward. Toshio doesn't even have a shear to give. Like, why didn't the Gemara do what the Rambam did? And number two, how did the Rambam just throw out the Gemara's explanation of the Mishnah? He just acted like it's not there. You see the problem. Right? The Meiri actually makes an interesting point on this, separate from the discussion we're going to have of the Rambam. I brought it for you in Source Dalet. He says, V'lamadnu b'perush zeh, kol shehmigo moel l'shnei dvarim danan oso achar hamoel yoser. He says, the truth is, the Rambam is saying that the migo in the first parak was about iser v'heter, but it was about iser v'heter and mamonos. Right? It was about her status to a kohen and also about how much money she was going to get. So the Rambam is telling me I'm looking at it as an iser v'heter migo. He's not dividing it up or saying, well, it's actually both. So the Meiri says that you go by whichever one is the more effective Migo claim. And there, evidently, he's saying it's the Iser v'Heter one. Why? I'm not clear. But I thought that was an interesting comment in the Meiri. But the big question is, again, why did the Rambam drop Shor Shachut? Why didn't our approach make it into the Gemara? So we're going to focus on the first question, really, of why isn't it in the Gemara. We're going to give one approach to that also. But take a look at what I brought you here regarding why the Rambam dropped the Gemara's Shor Shachut explanation. This is something that I discussed in Beis Medrash with some of the guys a few weeks ago. Actually, it was back in February, the end of February. You weren't around that day, Don. It's based on a Mishnah in Nazir. There's a Mishnah in Nazir that gives a very complicated case, which I brought you in source Hay. It's not really so important for our discussion, so we're not going to do it in depth, but the end of it is important for us. You have two people walking on the road. And somebody's coming in the other direction. So one of these two guys says, I'm a Nazir that's so-and-so. And the backstory, as the Mepharshim talk about on this Mishnah, is they're debating back and forth. Oh, yeah, that's Shua. No, that's not Shua. No, that's totally Shua. No, I'm telling you, it's not Shua. And finally, one of them says, I'm a Nazir that's Plony. I'm not going to say Shua, because then I'm going to get into trouble. But the guy says, I'm a Nazir that's so-and-so. And the other guy says, I'm a Nazir Shua, ain't that Plony? Absolutely not. Of course he's not Plony. And then, third party. Third party comes along and says, I'm a Nazir that one of you is a Nazir. And the other one says, no, I'm a Nazir she'ein echem mikem Nazir, that neither of you end up being, she'shneichem Nazirim, both of you are Nazirim, both of you are not Nazir. Beis Shammai says, kulan Nazirim. Beis Shammai says, you're all stuck. Now you're all Nazirim. Why Nazirus needs hafla? Whole discussion. But that's Beis Shammai's position. Beis Hillel omrim, eino nazir elamisha lo niskaimu devarav. Beis Hillel says this very strange set of words. He says, you're only a nazir if your words were not true. What are you talking about? No, you're a nazir if your words are true, not if your words are not true. Why does that make any sense? And the Gemara asks, why does that make any sense? And the Gemara gives a bunch of different answers, three different answers, if I remember correctly, in the Gemara. However, the Rambam in his Perush on the Mishnah gives an entirely different explanation that is different from the Gemara's explanation. I didn't bring it here because I didn't want us to get bogged down. It doesn't matter for our discussion. The point is, though, the Rambam says something which seems to deviate strongly from it. So, if you learn Maseches Nazir with the Arach Mishor, you see the Arach Mishor in the back of the Vilna Shas, so he offers a way to fit the Rambam into the Gemara's approach there. And the Rashash offers a way to fit the Rambam into the Gemara's approach there. But Tosfos Yom Tov says no. Actually, no, it's two approaches in the Gemara. And then you have this Tosfos Yom Tov. Tosfos Yom Tov says what you see here in Source Vav. Aval Pisha beGemara lo Pirshu Kein. Granted that in the Gemara they did not explain the Mishnah the way the Rambam did. Since there's no practical difference between the approaches, harishus nisuna lafaresh. The Rambam can say, I think Beis Hillel meant X. Even though the Gemara said, I think Beis Hillel meant Y or Z. She'en ani roa hefresh ben perish ha-mishnah le-perish ha-mikra. He says, I see no difference between how you explain a Mishnah and how you explain a Pasuk. Sharishus nesuna lefarish bimikros kaasher einenu aroz chiburia perushim shemimos hagemari. He says, look, you can open up a perush on the chumash and find people saying all sorts of things that do not fit what the medrash said, that do not fit what the gemara said, that do not fit what chazal said. You can say whatever you want on a pasuk, apparently. Ella shetzarosh shelo yachriyah v'yafarish shum din sheisoser das balei hagemara. The only thing you can't do is contradict the halacha. But as long as you're consistent with halacha, say what you want. I would add to that, if you're explaining a pasuk, you also have to be consistent with the psukim. In other words, you don't have the option of saying
how
is it that it could be that that Sarah was cruel to Hagar? The answer is because Hagar had killed Sarah's first child. What are you talking about? No, you need to be anchored in the psukim. You need to say something that makes sense. But at the same time, there's no limitation of somebody else already explained the pasuk this way. So too, Tosfos Yom Tov says, the Rambam is not restricted. He's explaining the Mishnah with an insight that he has. That happens to not be what the Gemara said. I brought you in source Zion, just because I always love this source, of Shimshon Rafal Hirsch. He's talking about explaining Agadata. And he says, his introduction to Chorev, there will accordingly be two schools of study engaged in the exposition of the divine law, differing only in the sources from which they draw their knowledge of it. One school will concern itself with the comprehension of the utterances regulating our practical conduct in and for themselves. That's what he calls Shmaitza. and its knowledge will be derived almost exclusively from the tradition which transmits the oral and written divine utterances and the regulations of the sages. He says when it comes to halacha, what regulates our lives, you don't get to make it up. You don't get to add things and decide things. But the other school, which is Agadita, will concern itself with reflecting and pondering on these laws. Its source of knowledge will be the more or less illuminating power of insight which dwells in each individual religious thinker. And he says, everything belonging to the first school, to Shmaitza, is obligatory because it emanates from the authority which has power to bind. All that springs from the second school has no power to bind because it represents only the views of individuals. Yes?
I struggle with it. I mean, how does halacha, if you can categorize it to agadah and halacha, and say for agadah it's fine, for halacha it's not, how does halacha evolve? Like, every gemara you open, they have the amoraim have their own insight, unless you want to say they have ruach hakodesh, but okay, they have their own human insight on how to be passing halacha.
So it's a good question. It's a big question, and I will not get to anything else in the shiur if we go down that route. No, I understand why you're asking, and there are answers for it. Like there's a whole discussion about the midosh atarah nidreshes bahen, and are they mesora or are they drasha? And like I'm just not going there right now. It's troubling for you. I understand. You're much more of a mesora guy. I get it. So this idea that the Tosfos Yom Tov says was actually a favorite idea of Rav Elyashiv, which I don't think people would have expected as a general rule in terms of the assumptions that people make. But Rav Zilberstein, if you take a look at Source Ches, his son-in-law, this is from his Chashuk Yechemet on the introduction to Baba Basra, Kishem Sheshivim Panim LaTora, Kach Shivim Panim LaMishnah. 70 facets to Mishnah, but not 71. Margala bepume de mori chami maran hagan Rav Yosef Shalom al Yashiv shlita divrei Tosfos Yom Tov da halan. He says Rav Yashiv used to quote that Tosfos Yom Tov. Vadvarim smeichem al ma'ayanos lelo sof shebesoch tarasenu v'chulanu choshkim udvekim ba. He loves this idea. And it's true. If you look on the Bar Ilan, they have Rav Yashiv al Hashas. You can find, just do a search, you'll find it in multiple places that he brings this idea. He brings it, for example, in Chulin, Kuf Amud Beis, where the Rambam says that no one ate Gid Hanasha before Matan Torah, meaning Jews stopped eating, that pre-Matan Torah, Jews did not eat Gid Hanasha. It doesn't start at Sinai, which seems to be against what the Gemara says. And so Rav Elyashiv quotes this, the Rambam can say what he says. So you could say that...
Could you learn the Rambam himself then? Could you learn the Rambam as what the Rambam... How the Rambam was the Mishnah?
Could you learn the Rambam?
Can we do the Rambam what the Rambam did to the Mishnah?
Ostensibly, yeah.
Can we come up with the Rambam and with the Rambam that no other Akron?
Why not?
Okay,
why not?
No,
I think people do that.
But then you still run into what the Tosfos Yom Tov was saying. You still, it's hard to do that with a halakhic, with an explicitly halakhic
right.
Word.
You'd have to.
If you come up with a creative reading of Rambam, but the whole Tosfos Yom Tov's whole point is that you can't change.
I mean, the problem really is that the Rambam views machshava as halacha. So that makes things more complicated. I'm not going to start on the philosopher. I will note though that answer is not the only way to understand what the Rambam did with Shor Shachut. The Rashash says the Rambam had a different girsa. Congratulations in Source Tes. He says, "Beperish Harambam Mechalek, the Hasam Hamigo Eino Ela Leinyan Iser VeHeter, Lachein Lo Amrina Lo Leinyan Mamona." Right? He brought you the Rambam's comment from the Perish of Mishnayos. Aval Hacha Havamigo Gamkin Leinyan Mamona Lahachi Modi Be Rabbi Yoshua. Vizel Gamkin Kavanas Harav. That's also the Bartanura's approach. VeAkarchach Girsa Acheres Haya Lifneihem BaGemara. They must have just had a different text in the Gemara. Well, that's an easy way to solve all problems. Instead of I don't need Shivim Panim. I just got Shivim Torahs. That's one way to deal with it. The Meiri finds a way to squeeze the Rambam into the Gemara. I have to say that I don't understand how it fits the wording, but this is what the Meiri does.
He
says, no, but he says that he is fitting it into the Gemara. No, he says, this is what the Gemara is saying. The Rambam is not making it up. Take a look at Source Yud. He says, Ugdolei HaMachabrim, which... is the Rambam. That's the way Meiri calls the Rambam. Pirshu b'ktas chibureyam hatam b'mesh emoder Yeshua b'zu mipnei shetanas migo ha'amuro b'perek rishon ein hadin nosein lahotzi ha'mamon b'tainas migo shebi'isurin. Because the migo claim in the first perek would not justify taking money away with a claim of a migo of isur. The argument is that the migo in the first parak is what we call a migo that is not mimin hataina. It's not of the same species as the original claim. Meaning, the taina is financial. Right? She's saying, I want 200 zuz. Right? She's making a financial claim. But there's no financial difference between saying I was raped after kiddushin or I was a mukas eitz. There's no difference financially. In other words, the whole point of amigo, let me explain it outside. The whole point of amigo is I said X, I would have been better off saying Y. But there wouldn't have been a better off financial situation if you said Y. Saying mukas eitz would not have gotten you more money. It would have put you in a better position in terms of iser v'heter, because you would have been mutter to a kohen. But it wouldn't have gotten you more money. What Rabbi Yeshua is arguing, as explained by the Rambam, is that in the case in the first perek, it's not a valid migo. Because I could have done better for myself in iser v'heter. Therefore, believe me for the claim that I made in Mamon. It's not me min hataina. That's what he thinks the Rambam is saying. I have to say, the only thing that's harder than fitting this into the Gemara is fitting this into the Rambam's words. But the way he explains it is that Shor Shachut refers to the field case. That's the bottom part of the source. I had a very difficult time understanding what he was doing with it. But he said the Shor Shachut refers to the case of the field. It's Hacha Shor Shachut. And it means that it's kosher like this Migo is kosher. I guess you can fit it into the Gemara. I just can't see it in the Rambam. You can fit it into the Gemara. The answer is, here it's Shor Shachut, because a Shor Shachut, a slaughtered ox, is kosher. So too, this Migo is kosher. There ain't Shor Shachut, because the Migo is not a kosher Migo. You follow? That's the way that the Meiri puts it in the Gemara. Lefianias daiti, lulei de mistafina, recognizing that I don't understand anything that I'm talking about. Nonetheless, I don't think that's what the Rambam is doing. I think what the Rambam is doing is that the Rambam read the rest of the Gemara. If you go ahead to Chaf Gimel Amid Beis, Chaf Dalet Amid Aleph, you find another sugya, which is an extension of this one, which makes the Rambam's distinction for him. The Gemara there asks the following question. The rest of our perek, not the rest of our perek, but much of the perek going forward, is going to deal with Pesha Asar Hua Pesha Hitir cases. So we start out with the field case, right? We start out with this, you know, believe me when I say that this field is, that I bought this field, right? Because I'm the one who started trouble in the first place. We're then going to see more cases of Pesha Asar. We're going to see witnesses who signed onto a document who say, yes, that's our signature, but we were not kosher Edom at the time. We're going to see a woman who says, yes, I was married, which nobody knew, but I'm no longer married. We have a series of Pesha Asar cases. And the Gemara is going to ask, why did I need all of these cases? Pesha Asar or Pesha Hitir is a simple principle. Give it to me once and I'm done. Why do I need all of these different versions? And as part of that discussion, you see the Gemara brought you in Source Yud Aleph. Kol hani lamali. Why do I need all of these Pesha Asar cases? Srichi, you need it. Why? De'itana Modo of Yeshua. If you would just have the case of Modo of Yeshua, which was the field case, that's different. Mishum de'ika d'rara de'mamona. That's different because there's the weight of the money being with this person. The field is with this person right now. And that's why I believe him. Aval Eidim Delekat Drajim Amona Imallah, but not the case with the Eidim on the document. I'm not even going through the application, because it doesn't matter for our purposes. The point is that regarding the field case and regarding the Eidim case, they come up with justifications. And then they say, V'iyash me'inan hanitarti mishum de mamona. It gave us the first cases, the field case, and the witnesses on the shtar case, because those are financial cases. But I would have argued, believe those cases, aval eshes ish de isura emalo, but don't believe in the case of an eshes ish, don't adopt the migo in a case of isura. Therefore, you needed to bring the third case, the case of the grusha. So what the Gemara is saying is, there's reason to distinguish and say, we accept migos in mamon cases, we don't accept migos in isur cases. And I think the Rambam is channeling that Gemara. He says that's exactly the point. That was why Rabbi Yeshua accepted in our parak and did not accept in the first parak. You see what I'm saying?
Such a simple answer, though.
Yeah, I know. It's too simple.
Like, does anyone say that?
Is I have not seen it anywhere.
But he can say it's really creative because the Rambam said he knew that.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's just like, it seems so clear.
Right.
I don't know.
No, I didn't mean that. It just. It's
no,
like,
that's fine.
No, it's like, it's a very questioned answer. Like,
yeah. Like, I don't know. To me, I mean, the weakness in the answer, the weakness in my answer would be that we don't know that Rabbi Yoshua disagrees with the Grusha case. In other words, if what I'm saying is correct, that this is the distinction, then Rabbi Yoshua will have to disagree. In the case of a woman who says, I was married and now I'm not, Rabbi Yoshua would have to disagree. The Gemara, the Mishnah, they don't bring up Rabbi Yoshua. So that is a little bit strange. But on the other hand, number one, they're not trying to apply, to that. I had a number two. I had another reason why I didn't think that was a weakness. I'm forgetting right now. But that would be the question, is why didn't you see that in the Gemara. Okay. Last point on Pesha Asar in general, before we turn to the other part of the Mishnah. Is Pesha Asar really a Migo? Is Pesha Asar really a Migo? The Gemara in Daf Chaf Beis is going to ask, how do you know Pesha Asar or Pesha Hitir? And they're going to try to bring it from a Pasuk. SBT, this Nasati La Ish Hazeh. They're gonna bring there. But the Gemara decides in the end, Pesha Aser is just a Svara. It's logical. If he was the one who created the problem, he's also believed to undo the problem. On the face of it, of course it's Amigo. Didn't we just have this whole discussion? Right? I mean, of course it's Amigo. We had this whole discussion. Rabbi Yeshua, right? I mean, it was even explicitly in the Gemara. Where was the line that I brought you from the in Source Aleph, last line in Source Aleph, Michti Haimigo Vahaimigo, Maishna Haimigo, Mahaimigo. Of course it's Amigo. Like, what else would it be? And it's logically Amigo. It fits the structure of Amigo. It barks like Amigo. Of course it's a duck. So why would you say otherwise? And the answer is, it's the Gemara Bava Basra. If you take a look in Source Yud Beis, Hamotzi Shtarchov Al Chaveiro, you have X and Y, Reuven and Shimon. Right, Reuven and Shimon are still fighting. So Reuven says, here's my document that says that Shimon owes me money. Malve omer lo nifrati klum. Reuven says, I never collected any of this loan. He owes me $1,000. Lova omer parati mechza. Shimon says, no, I paid you back half. He doesn't deny everything, because if he's denying everything, why does Reuven still have the document? He says, I paid you back half. Ve'ha'edim me'idin shapara kulo. And the witnesses say he actually paid up everything. Now what? Hareza nishba vagova mechza minachazim b'nei chorin. Reuven will have to swear that he's owed $1,000. And he can claim 50% out of unencumbered property. Avol mishubadin lo. But he can't collect from property that is already sold to somebody else by the borrower, because the owners of that property, the holders of that property, are going to say, we trust the witnesses. You have to prove the witnesses are wrong. You're not collecting our property in order to get this. That's the Gemara in Bava Basra. The Kovetz Shiurim, I didn't bring it on your sheet, but the Kovetz Shiurim of Elchanan in Bava Basra, Taf Chav Vav, treats this as Pesha Asar. It's a Pesha Asar case. That's the way that he looks at it. meaning the love, admitted he owes half, right? But he denied that he owed half. But he was the one who, because the witnesses on the shtar say the whole thing was paid off. So therefore, there's no claim against the borrower anymore. The borrower created the claim by saying, I owe half, and therefore we believe him that he does not owe the other half. That's the idea. There's a discussion with Steinman and Ayala Sashachar has a discussion about this as a Pesha Aser that I'm not going into. So this is a Pesha Aser case. Well, take a look at Source Yud Gimel, Tosos in Bava Basra. Nira Lari, Delahachi Naman Bishvua. It appears to me that the reason why he's believed with a Shvua to claim the other 50%, Mishum Dechashiva Kamilva Alpeh, because we view it as a verbal loan. We view it as a loan without a document. That's how we look at it. Mishum Dechashiva Kamilva Alpeh, Share Eidim Meidin Shashtar Parua, because the witnesses say the shtar is already paid off. So therefore, it's a verbal loan. Clear? That's the idea. Even though he's claiming that these witnesses are false, because he says no, right? The lova is saying, I owe you half. Nonetheless, the shtar has not been upheld. That's the point. Keep that in mind. The rest of the sugya in Bava Basra. Take a look at Sorisi Adalid. Va'afilu l'Rabbi Akiva da'amar meshev aveda havi. Rabbi Akiva is discussing a different case, as the Gemara gave you the reference above Metzia Gimel Amud Beis. But he talks about somebody who admits owing somebody else something, and we view him as Hashavas, we view it as Hashavas Aveda. Hani mili hecha deleka edim. That would only be where there were no witnesses at all to the transaction that this guy is confessing that he owes money for. Aval hecha deika edim irsuse irsis. This is the key. Where there are edim, where there are witnesses, he is afraid. And Tosfos writes, the guy is afraid, the borrower is afraid to say it's all canceled, because maybe those witnesses are not going to say what he hopes they're going to say. He hopes they're going to say that everything was paid off, but maybe that's not what they're going to say. And therefore he's afraid, and therefore he's not going to deny everything. He says, I owe half. And therefore, this is the key, Tosfos in Bava Basra, V'ilav sheyare shema yachzu ha'eda ben v'achishu hayalo migo tov. If not for his fear the witnesses were going to contradict him, he would have a good migo. Avalafi sheyare sheyachishu, but because he's afraid they're going to contradict him, enoach lo likfor akol. He doesn't want to deny everything and get stuck. He thinks, therefore, he's going to protect himself by not looking like too much of a liar, shelo yera eshakran yoser midai. So he admits owing half. That's what he thinks he can get away with. Point being that, and this Rav Elchanan Wasserman points out, is that the Migo is gone because of the Edim. And yet, it's still a Pesha Asar. As I brought you in Source 27, Source Tezayin, Rav Elchanan Wasserman, Tozas Nishba, Shtar Eina Miskayim Eleideo Da Asoba, Kamar De Par Mechza, Vahainu de hapesha asar hu hapesha hitir. He says, first of all, Tosos Nishba says that this document is a case of pesha asar by the lova. And then in the second Tosvos, he says, there is no migo because the guy's afraid. Umikomako mamrina na pesha asar, and yet we say a pesha asar. Umuchoch lehedya de hapesha asar amrina na filu hechadalek amigo klal. So he says, you say pesha asar even though there's no migo. The migo is gone because he's afraid to lie. So now you have a Pesha Asar without a Migo. Pesha Asar is not the same thing as Migo. What do I do? That's not supposed to happen. So Rav Elchanan has an answer. Rav Elchanan offers a resolution in his Kovashirim on Ksuvos, which I brought you in Yud Zayin, and I hope I understood him correctly. He says, Pesha Asar, once you hear it, I think it'll sound logical and it will be very helpful, actually. He says, Pesha Asar is a funny form of Migo. Normally, tell me, what is a Migo argument? When someone says Migo, what are they saying? I what? I could have done what?
Lied better.
Right. I could have said X. If I was lying, I could have lied in a better way. Right? I could have said X. Is that what a Pesha Asar is? No. A pesha asar is I could have kept my mouth shut. Not I could have said X. I could have not said Y.
I could have not said anything.
Yeah, but the thing that I said that got me into trouble, the pesha asar, I could have been quiet. I didn't have to say anything. He says there's a difference between migo de iboi shasak and migo de iboi tayin. There's a difference between a migo of I could have said X and migo of I didn't have to say anything. Yeah, sure.
Wouldn't time just differentiate? Like, technically, they're not, let's say it's you have a pesha asar, but if they come, if they haven't come after you yet, so you come and you say before, so you technically, you didn't really, like, you couldn't have, maybe you couldn't, you could have not said anything, but if they would have come after you later.
You're assuming that there's a taina. That somebody was going to. The whole point of our field case is that no one knew anything. We think that was the machlokas Rashi and Tosvos in terms of what's going on. Is there a taina against him or not? Is it comparable to the Basulim case where there is a taina? Right? Rashi said that's the whole point. There's no taina here. There is a taina there. And that's exactly what Rav Elchanan is thinking. Because that's what he bases his distinction on. He says that's exactly the idea. He says, Pesha Asar is I could have been silent. Migo is I could have said X. That's the distinction. And he says, like Rashi here, the difference between Misherastani Ne'enasti and Sada Zulakachtia is between the two kinds of Migos, according to Rashi's read. Perek 1 is I could have said Mukazates, and Perek 2 is I could have said nothing. And that's why Rabbi Yeshua is only good with Perek 2. The nafkamina for it he brings is Tol Kedei Dibur. He says, Amigo is only good at the moment. Amigo is not good retroactively, but Pesha Asar could be. That's, I'm going too far afield and there's other stuff that we want to get to. But I thought that was a really interesting distinction that he drew. Clear? Somewhat? Good? Okay, we gotta go to the easier part of the shiur now. I'm gonna do a new recording for it.